Welcome to Season 7 of Tell Me a Story I Don't Know, a fascinating journey into the lives of top sports personalities and their connections to Chicago. They reveal entertaining, memorable, and emotional stories many you've never heard before. I'm your host, George Hoffman, and please follow this podcast through our new partnership with Last Word on Sports. Just go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcast. Tell Me a Story I Don't Know is proudly presented by Mr. Duct, Chicagoland's premier comprehensive air duct cleaning and ventilation for residential and commercial properties. They're upfront and honest. Find them on the web at MrDuctCleaning.com. This week we feature the man who managed the Chicago Cubs to their first World Series title in 108 years, Joe Maddon.
I mean, I will defend the fact that we should have been left together longer. There was more chicken on the bone there, absolutely, that we didn't get to eat or consume or cook up, whatever you, however you want to describe it. It just ended way too quickly, and I don't think it should have, quite frankly. So nothing went wrong. You just don't win all the time. Other teams are good. There's adjustments that needed to be made, obviously, but I got nothing to lament upon, and I will defend our players and how we did things. It was that good. It's just a matter of the fact that you're not going to win it every year.
The fact that Joe Maddon accomplished what no one had since 1908 puts him in a class by himself. Then again, so does his effervescent personality. When he arrived in Chicago after revitalizing a moribund franchise in Tampa, Maddon was greeted with great enthusiasm. It paid off, but the marriage lasted only 5 years. Since then, Maddon managed the Angels, then wrote a book aptly titled The Book of Joe, Try Not to Suck in Baseball and Life. He loves wine and treasured Cousin Eddie. Not a relative, but something moving just the same. So, Joe Maddon, tell me a story I don't know.
First of all, thank you for having me on, George. It's great to see your face again. And number two, there's a lot of those, thank God, that people don't know about. I'll tell you the one thing that I don't even think I related this, but one of my favorite things ever, I was doing baseball clinics in Italy. And I went from Venice to Regensburg, Germany, via train by myself. And I'm going through that northern part of Italy, and I had at that time one of the first iPods out, those little square boxy kind of things, and loaded with music, and had my Springsteen music on, and I'm going through the wine country of northern Italy, and I'm sitting in the dining car all by myself, and order this tray of charcuterie meats, cheeses, and some wine, and I'm sitting there with my headset on, looking out the window, almost like you talk about surrealistic moments, and I'm sitting there. Going through northern Italy, up through into Germany, the beautiful mountainside there, and listening to Springsteen on my iPod all by myself. And it was one of the most interesting, exhilarating moments I've ever had in my life to have that all to myself, actually, which is not a bad thing. I like moments like that. But to get on that train doing baseball, going from Italy to Germany by myself, northern Italy, where my grandparents had come from, one of the best singular moments of my life.
So you're talking about being alone. But what is it about you that you are so engaging and inviting to people? Because honestly, not many managers or coaches are like that. You appear to be a free spirit, but I'm not quite sure that's the right moniker.
A lot of everything that I am, I believe, is really rooted in where I came from. My parents and my teachers, my mentors, my coaches, everything from Hazleton, PA. I really believe that all the characters and the character you develop from that hometown, that you were social. You're always social. And again, it's kind of like antithetical to what's going on today with everybody just communicating through devices and text messages and don't even use your phone for phone calls. I think at that time you were not forced. It's just the way you lived. You were always in conversation with somebody else. You're always going somewhere to be with somebody else. And I think that all conspires to permit you to be able to communicate. And, so again, without even realizing, you got to be grateful that you grew up in the era that you did at the time that I did too, in the 60s, late 60s, early and mid 70s. really an interesting moment in life, I think. And so I was very fortunate just to have it all occur at the right time and to grow up in a small town like I did, with the values that were bestowed upon me by the people around me. So I think it all that stuff is why it turned out the way it did.
Well, I grew up the same time you did. And here's what I've always said about you, Joe. You're the modern day hippie.
I guess, because I wasn't then. I wasn't then. I was just I was a jock. And I think I'm still a jock, but I'm less of a jock maybe than I had been at that time. I just was totally submerged in my making a career out of baseball. All the hippie stuff going on at that time. Yeah, the music, the long hair, the way I dressed. And I think the individual method of thought is another thing that I gained or gathered from that time. I was never into groupthink. It had to be what I thought and why I thought it. Yeah, I would listen to everybody. I was very coachable, still am. But at the end of the day, you have to make up your own mind what you think is right or wrong for you. So, I think that's all the residuals of hippiedom. I mean, that method of thinking. But in today's world, I think we conform too easily. Everybody wants to be the same. Everybody wants to look the same. Everybody wants to sound the same. You want to drive cars that look the same. You want to, the music all sounds the same. All that stuff, I think we're just getting away from the individuality that really was a big part of the 70s.
I think I'm going to use a term that you did. You're a different cat, Joe. And I think that that's why a lot of people respect you, is that you are different. And because of that, you are refreshing as well.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, and it's not intentional. It's just how you, like I said, you're the product of your environment. You grew up that way, but I would love to see more of that. I think, even in today's game of baseball, I think there's a push, not a realized push. It's something that just has morphed into it, that everybody's on the same track all the time. Everybody wants the same things. They want the same players. They want the same methods. They want to analyze the game in the same way. And individual organizations are just, they don't have the same identity. And the people that are running them are again, very, very similar, regardless of the situation or the team that you're with. I think I want to believe that people want to see that individuality. I believe that they do want differences within their groups that are identifiable. And I think hopefully that's going to be, it returns to that. I believe it will at some point. But I just think it's a product of what's going on right now, where everybody wants everything the same, whereas back in the day, you want it to be different.
Before we get into your book, which is a fascinating read, I want to take you back to Halloween 2014, when you were about to get dressed up in a new costume, a jersey with the Chicago Cubs written on it. That's when you were hired by Theo Epstein, and then introduced several days later at the Cubby Bear. It's, of course, a bar across the street from Wrigley Field. I was there. It was quite an experience, to say the least. After 9 years, Joe, in Tampa, where you had taken the Rays to the World Series, what was it like at age 58 to become the manager of this celebrated yet championship-starved franchise?
Well, it was exhilarating. The fact that Theo and Jed and the Ricketts family wanted me to be there was quite a compliment. I remember flying into the city at that point, landing at O'Hare, looking at all those houses. As you're flying over the top there, and you're thinking, man, there's a lot of, you're going to weirdly attempting to influence a lot of people here because it's a pretty big city. And also weirdly, I felt very confident about it. I can't tell you why, but I've always felt good about my methods and how I do things and coming off a nice run with Tampa Bay. So you're landing in O'Hare, you're thinking all these things, and you get there and Theo says, we're going to have the press conference at the Cubby Bear, which I had no idea what the Cubby Bear was or where it was. And then you get there and I look out the windows. I'm sitting down at that table up front and I could see my name on the marquee. And I'm sure Theo had it set up that way because he's very, very good at details.
We're very fortunate to welcome one of the very best managers in baseball, the person we believe will be our long-term manager and a real difference maker for us with his leadership in the clubhouse and in the dugout. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to introduce the manager of the Chicago Cubs, Joe Maddon.
Wow. So you're sitting there, you're addressing everybody about what you believe in and how you're going to get this done. And you look out the window at the marquee, which is one of the most iconic in all of the world, actually, I think, and really a special moment for me. But I did everything I said. I felt good about it. I feel that's the way you have to approach a new situation in sports. You have to go in there with a specific plan and be able to verbalize it. You have to make it believable. You have to have people literally buy into it. And I, you know, pretty much believe that that occurred on that particular day. But it's nothing I was trying to sell. It's everything I believed in and still do. So it was a really special moment. I, like, as you asked the question and I'm sitting here, I could absolutely visualize what it looked like and what I felt like. And looking at the audience and Jay sitting there and Tommy Tanzer, agent Alan Nero sitting right in front of me. All this stuff is very, very recent in my mind's eye. And I was very fortunate to get this opportunity.
When's the last time you had your air ducts cleaned? Here's the best solution, Mr. Duct, a name Chicagoland has trusted for over 20 years. They work on your furnaces, air conditioners, and do repairs, maintenance, and installations. In other words, they're your all-around company for air quality choice and more. Mr. Duct provides on-site commercial ventilation cleaning estimates. You'd be hard-pressed to find better. So give them a call at 888-4-MR-DUCT. That's 888-467-3828. And Mr. Duct is the right choice to clean your residential dryer vents. They do a full inspection to make sure your dryers are running properly. Mr. Duct works with schools, health facilities, and office buildings to make sure you're breathing clean air. Their testimonials are endless, and with good reason. So don't think twice when you're ready to work on air ducts, dry vents, and so much more. Just think Mr. Duct, 888-4-MR-DUCT. That's 888-467-3828. And find them on the web at MrDuctCleaning.com. What was the Chicago experience away from the ballpark?
The best. I really love the place. I still do. Always will. Weirdly, it feels like a home for me. You know, I'm from Pennsylvania. I've lived in a lot of places, but when you go back there, it just wow, everything. It's like a big warm fuzzy. I could exist there again very easily, riding my bike up and down Lakeshore there. And the part of it is I wasn't really golfing at that time. And now I'm a golfer, and to be able to participate in all those wonderful courses back there would be great. But the people, every place I went was recognized easily, and a lot of kind words. And it's just all of that for me. It's you know, there's places that really are near and dear to my heart. Of course, I always talk about Hazleton, but Chicago's right up there, man.
You mentioned in your book, which, by the way, is a wonderful collaboration with Tom Verducci, you didn't want to manage a ready-made team, and there were times you weren't ready for personal reasons. The Cubs weren't ready-made, Joe, but certainly on the cusp, as was proven in your first year in the dugout. Did you get a sense that this was about to happen?
Well, you know, if you really look back at that, and people talk about ready-made, I'm so pleased with that first year, because look at the roster during the course of that year and all the different people that came through. There's going to be a bunch of names in there that you didn't recognize. And you have to understand it was the ascension of Chris Bryant and eventually Addison Russell and Starlin Castro willing to move to second base. And a lot of other young players, Wilson Contreras eventually make it as Mark Coffey Baez. Think about it. And then there was Baxter, one of the extra guys that made a big impact for us, and others. I mean, just it's really kind of interesting how that all came together, because in the beginning of the year, I remember in spring training, I was really eager to get started there. And I loved all, you know, there's Anthony Rizzo and everybody else, wonderful guys, players. But there was still a lot of question marks. And in spring training, there was a lot going on I didn't like. I remember one day I got upset at the team running some cutoffs and relay drills, and I just thought it was too cavalier. I think it was at that point for me, the group was kind of content with being the Cubs playing in Chicago at Wrigley Field. You're still going to get sold out regardless of how well you do or not do. It's iconic franchise, all the different things, lovable losers, all those things were connected in that spring training, and I didn't like that. And so we really pushed on it early. And we're playing, I guess, right around 500 most of that year. But we made the switch with Starlin and Addison and big series against the Giants in the latter part of the year. All of a sudden, we became pertinent.
Another 3-2. Called strike three. Hector Houdini gets through the ninth. Cubs win. Cubs win 2-0 the final, and they sweep them.
So it was, You know, a lot of people look back at that and think it was all set up. There was a lot of nice pieces coming to bear and in place. But what we did during the course of that year and really established our culture and our personality, which I think carried us for the next several years, was all born of that spring training and the fact that these guys all bought in. And then eventually a lot of great moves were made and guys got their feet on the ground and it became the 2016 Cubs.
And those 2016 Cubs finally broke through to win the World Series. I wondered what that was like for you as a manager.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series! Bryant makes the play! It's over! And the Cubs have finally won it all! 8-7-10!
Exhausting. And, you know, you're flying back and you land, and of course, there's all kinds of stuff going on. And the way you're greeted at the airport, you know, the ride back downtown, and you know, people. There was an option that we had. A lot of guys wanted to go out and stay out all night and have some breakfast and continue the celebration that night, which I passed on because I had nothing left in the tank. But it's a real feeling of great satisfaction, like nothing you've ever experienced before, from a personal level. How I got to that particular point that you think about those things, including your parents. My dad's note was no longer with us. My mom is, and everybody else, your aunts, uncles, your family, your wife, your kids, everybody are included in that thought. That's just how I work. That's where I come from. So all those things are a part of your thought process, and you finally lay your head down on a pillow and you wake up and it's like, wow, we actually did this. And knowing that the parade was going to ensue, and I really had no idea. I knew we were going to have a parade, but I had no idea it was going to have that magnitude to it. I did. I really, maybe I was being naive. I get a phone call. I don't know if it was the next morning or the morning after that, from President Obama. Because Michelle was such a big Cub fan growing up. And of course, the president being from Chicago too, or having lived there. It was really, again, and I have one of my t-shirts, "May all your surrealisms come true." That's the only way you can describe it, because it's beyond dreams. It's beyond dreams to be able to arrive at that particular point and have all these wonderful things occur for you and your family. And it's just, it's indescribable. I mean, you live it and then you reflect on it eventually, but I don't even know exactly when it all sinks in.
I was reporting from a helicopter. It was a heck of an experience, a massive amount of people all over the city and downtown. You were basking in the glow, but the Cubs never made it back to the World Series. Joe, what went wrong?
Nothing. It's not easy to get back to the World Series. That's the part that I really find amusing. Because you win it, and if you look at the last 20 years, nobody's really repeated. I know some teams have gone back. Most recently, Houston's done a great job of getting there, and of course, the Giants did too during the last decade. But it's not easy to do that. We went to 3 consecutive NLCSs, which to me was fabulous, including one World Series, the first in 108 years. And then we run into a tough year where we Milwaukee just played great at the end of the year. We had an extremely tough schedule.
Game over, division over. The Brewers are champions of the Central.
And then 19, we were hanging in there pretty well. And then last month, guys got banged up and it didn't work.
2-2, Kinsler deals. Swing and a miss, got him, and it's over. And the Marlins are headed to the division series as they beat the Cubs. 2-0 the final here. And they advance to the DS.
I mean, I will defend the fact that we should have been left together longer. There was more chicken on the bone there, absolutely. That we didn't get to eat or consume or cook up, however you want to describe it. It just ended way too quickly, and I don't think it should have, quite frankly. So nothing went wrong. You just don't win all the time. Other teams are good. There's adjustments that needed to be made, obviously, but nothing, I got nothing to lament upon. And I we'll defend our players and how we did things. It was that good. It's just a matter of the fact that you're not going to win it every year. But we competed. I think the Cub fans look back at those 4 years or four out of those 5 years, one of the best runs in the history of the organization. And to be part of that is pretty special.
In your book, you discussed analytics, which you were a big advocate for. But as time went on, you felt as it was perhaps being overused by upper management and taking away from your ability to manage. The gut instinct, Joe, is being replaced by numbers.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. And it still is going on. And again, I try to make it clear in the book, I'm not opposed to any of that. And I'm absolutely into collaboration. What I'm not into is interference. When it comes down to right prior to the game, managers and coaches really need to be able to two things, be empowered and be able to do their jobs. I'd like to see more separation between analytics and the actual game of baseball. I'd like to see, like I said, coaches empowered again. It gets to the point where coaches become gun shy, and even as a manager, you do too, because you're getting so much information, and oftentimes it's not necessarily said in the way that you're being told what to do, but maybe suggested in a very strong way what to do, and it really clouds your method of thinking. And again, it's not the way it's supposed to be or should be, I don't think. Again, it should be separate departments. Analytics should serve the game and not the other way around. Getting an opportunity to do this again, I want absolutely the best of the best, but I would like to see it lined up more where the analytical department and coaching staff are absolutely on the same page. And once the information is processed and given to the coaching staff, we're permitting the coaching staff and the manager to do their jobs and not make it a middle management kind of a situation. So that's all I'm talking about. I just think it's, when you have people in your office right before the game giving you information and making strong suggestions regarding what you should do, it just clouds it up. It makes it more difficult. And there are no absolutes. These are human beings playing a game. Feeling experience and wisdom should still be valued, whereas I don't think it is as much as it had been in the past, whereas inexperience and the more control, the way people are looking at the game right now, that's what they're looking for. And I don't agree with that. I don't. And I think that's part of why people have shied away from the game a little bit. It's not as interesting in a sense because it is. It's becoming this same thing regardless of what city you're in. And I think that's detracting from the level of excitement and interest just by the human element being diminished.
Well, the biggest sin in all of this is pitching, Joe. We grew up in an era when complete games were the norm. Now, a complete game is like a no-hitter. It's rare. And you make a point of that in your book regarding Jake Arrieta and how you allowed him to throw 120 pitches to get a complete game, and that really ticked off Theo Epstein.
Yeah, I mean, I let minor league Irish do that when I was in rookie ball. As I turned out, I mean, Tommy Verducci did great research. I guess one time I let Bobby Kipper go up to 140 pitches in a rookie ball game. Yeah, that's becoming a little bit too out of control, out of hand. Again, this is all based on the third time through the batting order stuff. And right now you're looking at teams attempting to, they have to spend a lot of money to purchase aces, you know, really frontline pitchers because they're not developing their own. Because they're not permitting the pitchers to develop. Everything's controlled so much on the minor league level. These young pitchers are not learning how to pitch through difficulty, pitch more deeply into the games, throw more pitches, build up arm strength, whatever it takes. Guys are going to get hurt regardless if you protect them or not. Guys are going to get hurt. Of course, I always would want to do things within parameters and reason, but I'd like to see like almost the development of more aces, knowingly going out there. And as you're developing young pitchers, really consciously attempting to develop starters that are ace potential, guys that you would have to spend zillions of dollars on the free agent market. Why don't you develop a system where you can develop these guys on your own in the minor leagues? It's going to require different methods that are employed right now. Again, these guys are horses with Verlander, Scherzer, as an example, Garrett Cole right now. Yeah. All these guys that you're paying a lot of dough for, these guys are different animals. And they want the ball more deeply into the game. They want to throw as many pitches as is necessary. And this needs to be bred, I think, more on the minor league level. If, in fact, you want to have these kind of guys show up at your doorstep 3 or 4 years after you draft them.
You know, this reminds me of something Bill Veeck once told me when I was a Cub reporter back in 1978.
we were discussing ownership. And he said, baseball owners are diametrically opposed to logic. I will never forget that.
Well, but it's not even the owners. I mean, it's who's running the situation on the minor league level. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. It's groupthink because everybody's thinking the same thing right now. Somebody might take a flyer on this and all of a sudden attempt to develop pitchers in a different way, more of an old school way combined with new. Again, I guess it's the in-school method. I mean, it's not old, it's not new, it's being in school. And you have to utilize everything that's at your disposal, and you just can't be heavy-handed one way or the other. I'm all about that. But I think at some point, if a group decides that we're going to utilize a different method in the minor leagues, permit these guys to throw more innings, more pitches, in an attempt to develop them and not be so concerned all the time with being injured. And part of being injured all the time is the methods being employed where they're just trying to get these guys to throw as hard as they can and spin the ball to top of the strike zone. That's just going to lead to issues and problems as opposed to pitchability, i.e. Kyle Hendricks. He's been pretty good for a long period of time. Maddox was pretty good for a long period of time. Kershaw doesn't throw 1,000 miles an hour. Kershaw has been pretty good for a long period of time. There's way Johnny Lester, a big Johnny Lester guy. All these guys, and even Jake. Jake was what, 92, 93, 94? And sometimes 95, but Jake had tremendous spin on the ball and great movement.
Pitches in there, got him. And Arrieta gets the punch out. Got him, frozen. And Arrieta able to get him 1-2-3, his third strikeout.
Different ways to getting this done, but it has to be nurtured on a minor league level if, in fact, you want to realize the fruits on the major league level.
If you want to hear more guests on Tell Me a Story I Don't Know, all you have to do is go to Last Word on Sports on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to the many wonderful interviews we've done dating back to January of 2021.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your tenure here ended rather unceremoniously when you were not offered a new contract by Theo Epstein, who's mentioned in your book, The Book of Joe. That had to be demoralizing, if nothing else.
I think we're at a point where we just need a little bit of change and something new, and that's natural. That's the natural way of things. Change, if you embrace it the right way, is good for all of us.
Well, it was shocking because I'm sitting in the house right now in California where this all occurred when Perry came to visit me. I didn't expect it to happen. I really didn't. I really thought it was about him coming here to tell me he's going to let coaches go. But quite frankly, I was relieved that it wasn't them and it was me. It was shocking. I didn't expect it at all, not even for a second. We had gotten off to the best start we had in years here, and then we had a tough stretch, which happens. And then all of a sudden, the rug gets yanked. So it was different. I didn't expect it, but it happens in the game. And actually, it's good when it happens to you sometimes because it's you need to understand what that feels like. You need to understand how do you get through this. You need to understand how do you come back from it. All those things are part of the growth process. I will be 69, and 69 is now the new 49. That'll happen. And by no means am I through with anything. I'm just enjoying this moment right now, and we'll see what comes along down the pike in the near future, hopefully. But in the meantime, again, it's good to go through different life experiences. It's good to feel what others have felt in moments that things aren't working in your favor and they don't go your way. There's nothing wrong with that. I've had it happen a lot, prior to becoming actually a professional baseball player, being passed over in a draft, signing for nothing, eventually starting as a 27-year-old minor league manager, working your way to the big leagues. There's a ton of failure, and that's a big part of the Book of Joe, is the struggle and how important the struggle is. It's just another level of that. And while I'm enjoying what I'm doing right now, I'm still internally evaluating because I know things happen for a reason, and a lot of good's going to be come out the other side of all this.
What I also like about the book, Joe, including wonderful stories about managers and players and some who didn't make it, was a chapter about leadership. What is leadership to you?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate it. I mean, that was the whole thing. I didn't want it just to be a generic book on baseball. I wanted it to exceed all that. So did Tom Verducci and I when we first began putting this together. We conceptually, it was about comparing and contrasting managing in the 80s to present day, as well as the madnesses that you're seeing littered throughout the book and the leadership components that are involved in it. We've had some great feedback about that to the point where one fellow down in Princeton, New Jersey, where Tommy lives, suggested that the book should be required reading in MBA programs. That's like, wow, that's a pretty substantial thought right there. So yeah, there's a lot of leadership principles in there, even right down to try not to suck, embracing the target, aiming high, don't permit the pressure to exceed the pleasure. I could go on and on. See with first time eyes, feel with first time passion. All these things, I think, blend or lead to, if you're in charge of any group, just by reading these chapter titles and then maybe just delving into it a little bit, you're going to derive something from it that's going to create a thought within you that I think is going to help you in your in whatever it is that you do, whether you're a teacher, whether you are a coach, whether you're a parent, whatever you may be doing. I think it will spur thought. And that's the whole thing about leadership. If I can't teach you anything, but if I could help make you think, I've done my job.
When you wrote this book, I wonder if it crossed your mind it might prevent you from ever being hired as a manager again.
Of course it did. But that was, there's no reason to, interview deceptively or put out a false method regarding what you think and how you think. My intent was that if you are very transparent about what you think and how you are thinking, that might actually become more attractive, hopefully. And that's the only place I would want to work anyway. So I thought it could preclude, but also, like I said, the way the game trends and goes back and forth, eventually maybe what I'm saying right now would become more attractive in the near future. I don't know that. But I was prepared to face the circumstances either way. But you're going to get from me exactly what I felt and I thought, because this is who I am. This is how I think. This is how I feel. And if you want me to work with your group, these are the kind of thoughts that I think are going to help get you to the last game of the baseball season and win it.
I assume you'd like to manage again, but if not, then what?
I would like to manage again, but also a front office work is very interesting to me too. I've done pretty much everything there is in the game. I actually had been a farm director briefly at one time. I've been a roving instructor. I've been a minor league manager. I've been an area scout. I've been a hitting coach. I've been a base running coach. I've been a catching coach, first base coach, third base coach, manager, bullpen coach. I've seen the game from all different angles, and I haven't forgotten any of it. And I've had great mentors and teachers throughout my life and career. So, I know I have a lot to offer. And it just, again, it would have to be the right marriage. I think that's always important to anybody. And so when that opportunity arises again, which I believe it will, there's a lot that I could bring to the table. And I'm very strong in what I believe in, how I purvey it.
What was the best part of writing this book?
The best part was as Tom Verducci and David Black, our agent, and Sean Desmond, the publisher, constantly compelling me to dig down more deeply. On a daily basis, I would send in audio tapes of up to an hour, of like 100 hours of tape, and they would listen to it. They'd come back to me and kept asking me to dig down more deeply, which what it does eventually internally really galvanizes what you think and how you think it. It clarifies your thoughts. It brings back things to the forefront that you hadn't thought maybe in a while. And it just validates with everything that you had done. So it's a very interesting process. There's a lot of content. There's a lot of stuff that we audio taped and talked about that aren't included in the book. And we were over 400 pages. And then Sean asked us to bring it back down just because he thought that might be too thick, a little bit too much for people to consume. So it was very involved and deep. And like I said, these guys really kept drawing it out. I mean, to me, that was probably the most interesting part of all this.
I'd like to go back to wine, which I love, and apparently you do too. I always remember some of the post games at Wrigley Field when you would be swirling a glass of red wine. You really do love it.
Well, red wine is good. You read so much about how healthy it is, but on top of that, it's just good. I mean, I'm into sipping it again. I've got a nice array. We just drove over from Arizona to Long Beach, and I brought several bottles with me. It's a great way to finish off your day. I'm talking like maybe a glass, some really good stuff. And the line that life is too short to drink cheaper bad wine is absolutely correct. But you don't have to spend a lot of money either. Just find what you like, whatever your palate loves or appeals to you. The thing about wine to me, it's like I've told my partner in our restaurant in Florida, Michael Stewart, I said, the really great wines, the moment you sip them, they become a part of you. And I think that's how I feel. I it's weirdly when you sip on a wine that you really dig, it just absorbs into you, and it's very satisfying immediately. So a really great wine, the moment you drink it, becomes a part of you.
Cousin Eddie was your beloved RV. I mean, you guys drove it around a long time, and now it's gone. What happened?
Yeah, cousin Eddie, he's gone. He's gone. Yeah, he had to go for now, but hopefully another iteration will show up in the near future. We're just moving around too much, man. There's no place to park it. So, cousin Eddie, I think it'll be for the fourth iteration when we return to the roads. But for right now, we had to give him up. But I tell you what, I love it. I miss driving that bus to drive cousin Eddie across the desert. You sit up there on top. The ride is so good. If you got to go to the bathroom, you just got to pull over very quick and just go to the bathroom. You walk to the back. If you need a snack, it's right there. If you want to park next to this to the ocean, just drive your nose up to different RV resorts throughout the country, and you're right there. There's so much freedom and flexibility to it. I do miss that. So eventually, we'll get back to it.
When this podcast drops, we will both be 69. I've got you by a couple of months. You said 69 will be the new 49. So what will 70 be, Joe?
70 will be the new 50. Yeah, when I did my first press conference with the Rays in 2005, I did mention to them at that time, 51 is the new 31. And, you know, it's you just subtract 20. It's an easy equation. It's pretty accurate, I think. Listen, during the summer, I was in Pennsylvania. I played golf. I'm into my new thing. Out of 140 days I was there, I think it was 140 or so, I played 130 days of golf. Great way to stay in shape mentally and physically. I got my boys out here in Southern California. I'll be playing with again. I'm still riding my bike. I try to watch my diet. I try to exercise. I'm getting great sleep. My God, I thought I was a good sleeper. I've turned into an Olympian. It's been all good stuff. It's like I said, it's an internal thing. You gotta get in there and search it a little bit, but you gotta remain true to yourself. We all do, and when you do, I think that's going to always be your best version of yourself, and that's the one that's going to appeal most to people outside.
I ask this final question to all my guests, Joe. If not for baseball, what would you have been?
Yeah, that's actually very easy. I was recruited to go to Cornell also, to play football and baseball when I went to college. And I eventually decided on Lafayette, which was a wonderful decision on my part. But Cornell had this school of hotel and restaurant administration that I thought, wow, you mean to tell me I could go to school for that? So that was really appealing. I got put on their waiting list. And there was a lot going on at that time, a lot of different schools. So eventually I just decided on Lafayette and did not want to wait on Cornell. But the point is, I would absolutely, I think, I'd like to believe, running a huge resort in either the Caribbean or the Mediterranean right now, something like that would be on the docket. I'm a big fan of both of those bodies of water and everything that surrounds them. I love Latin America. I love the people of Latin America. And of course, my grandparents on my dad's side are from Italy. And so I've always told Marco Oliveras, who was a coach for the Cubs at one point, Mako, there's a stream of water that I believe runs through like this underwater jet stream from the Mediterranean to the Caribbean. Cause we're brothers, man. I'm so affiliated with the Hispanic community, Latinos, and how they're raised and what they believe in and how they are. So I think there's a strong affinity that comes from the Mediterranean to the Caribbean. So if I could have run a resort in either one of those spots, I'd have taken it.
This has been an absolute joy, Joe. It's been a while since we spoke. I would be remiss in not thanking a longtime associate and friend of yours, Rick Vaughn, for setting up this interview, and a mutual friend of both of ours, Dave Wills, for getting a big assist. It's been a real pleasure. You mean a lot to this city. You made my role as a reporter much more enjoyable and enriching. And thank you, Joe Madden, for telling me a story I don't know.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you for having me on. And I did throw in the one reference to Dave there when I did mention more chicken left on the bone. That's one of David's favorites.
I'm sure you'll appreciate that. My thanks to ESPN, the Chicago Cubs, and NBC Sports Chicago for those wonderful highlights. And my thanks, as always, to the people behind the scenes that help make this wonderful podcast possible. TJ Reeves for putting us on the map, Will Hatzell for his crafty editing, Nick Tochi for our wonderful graphics, and to our new partner, Last Word on Sports. And to our presenting sponsor, Mr. Duct. You can find them at MrDuctCleaning.com. Tune in next week when we feature another intriguing guest on Tell Me a Story I Don't Know. I'm George Hoffman, and that's all she wrote.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.